Hi, this is Jeff Seymour, and welcome to the podcast. Today, I'm going to discuss substitution and the theory of it in acting and why I think it should be avoided. I'll explain. Okay, so this is the 85th podcast, and I want to thank all of you that have been sending me notes or messages or emails about these podcasts. I'm also looking for other platforms, other podcast platforms. Right now we're on Spotify and iTunes and Podomatic. So if any of you have any suggestions for other platforms to, you know, widen the audience, I'd appreciate it. In the meantime, please share this with your friends, particularly if you're enjoying them. And don't forget to come out and order to class here in Los Angeles. Okay. I recently had someone ask me a question about the term substitution. Asked me if I believed in substitution. And I've been asked that question before and I've dealt with it, but I thought I wanted to do a podcast on it because I think that then I could expand on it and we could talk about, you know, an acting philosophy in general and why, yet another reason I think things need to change, and how disempowering many of these old styles of working, how disempowering they actually are. And I'm going to prove it to you by asking you just to use your common sense. So if you don't have your common sense with you, go ahead and put this on pause, go get it, come back, because you're going to need it. And if you have it, this is all going to make such good, empowering sense to you. Okay, so generally, you know, what does it mean? Well, the term came from, of course, a style of teaching and method acting where it was thought that when you couldn't feel something for someone, if you supposedly, you know, hated your co-star, but you were supposed to love them dearly, that you could substitute someone in your life that you've loved for this person, and to the point that part of the goal would be that you would actually kind of almost photo overlay their face over their face. You would see your boyfriend or girlfriend's eyes. You would see your, you know, husband's lips, whatever the thing was. I mean, this is the kind of psychosis that you apparently were supposed to go through, you know. I think it's just, you see, I know why there is such a huge attachment for this shit, because that just sounds so wizardry. I mean, that just sounds like you're being a wizard. Oh my God. Did you see what he did? Did you see the transformation, the way drew? So then you think, yes, that's what acting's about. It's about a kind of sorcery. It's about a kind of being able to work to conjure almost like some fabulous street magician, these things that you would create because you're a creator of creations. And you see, I mean, this stuff is just so stupid to me. Now, look, I'm going to ask you to use a little bit of logic here, okay? And I want you to use some common sense. So here we go. Okay. So you're an actor, and apparently we could hire you to make believe you see things that aren't there, right? But like better than anyone else. And so that's why you got the gig and you just know how to pretend your pants off. Isn't that what acting is? What is it other than putting our minds where we want it to be and then acting accordingly? What's the big deal here? I went online to just look into it a little bit, you know, to see other examples, you know, of this stuff, because I was exposed to it, of course, when I was, you know, a youngster in a theater school. But, I didn't practice it much because it seemed like the long way around. And what I mean by that is, okay, I could do all of that, or you know what I could do? since I'm pretending everything else, since I'm not really a mobster, since this really isn't an actual working Tommy gun I'm holding, why don't I just go ahead and, along with all of that pretending, I'll just pretend the thing I'm being paid for, I will just pretend like I love my co-star. Really? I need to, like, overlay a face? What? So I read this one story about a guy who, I guess, trains people in this stuff. And he was giving examples, you know, brilliant examples of the artistry here. And he recalled how he was doing a play. And, you know, his mother had passed away. And so there was, I guess, some melancholy aspect of this scene. And there was a cigar box on the set that he decided he would make a personal object, in the sense that that was his box his mother used to own, and she kept in it, you know, her sewing supplies. So when he walks over to open it, you know, there's going to be this, like, suddenly mainline surge of, like, you know, motherness. So he says that what he substituted was an image, as he opened up the box, an image of opening up a coffin. And in it lay his dead mom. I mean, you can't write this shit. Really? Is that what you did? And then what happened? Did you cry? What are we talking about here, man? What? Come on. You know, if I'm the director, I say, do me a favor. You know, there's your mom's stuff. She's gone. And first time back to the house, you have to sell everything. And walk around a little bit. You know, there's your mom's things over there. There's some of her things over here. You know. All right, let's go. Let's try one. Here we are. You know, that you just can't pull that off. And what is the idea that you put your dead mom in the box, man? Because I got to tell you, I love my mom. I miss her. Oh, what I wouldn't give for just, you know, just to chat with her again and have her make me one of her delicious meals. I would love it. Okay, I adored my mom. But here's the deal. If I put my dead ma in a little box that I open up on stage or while the camera's rolling, and I open a box and my mom is in there dead, I think I would poop my pants. I would poop my pants. I would scream. I would drop the box. Because, okay, first of all, look, my mom was not a tall lady, but there's no way she could have fit in a cigar box. There's no way. I mean, I don't even know if she'd get her head in it, to be honest. So if I opened up the box, I saw even my mom's head in there. I would scream. But I'm sure that, you know, if this happened, who knows if it did, when he told his, you know, colleagues, I'm sure they all sat around, you know, oh, interesting choice. Well done. Substitution. You see, the big problem here is it all comes back to this basis for old style acting that I think is so disempowering, and that is that we won't even pursue the idea of just reacting to what we're seeing in front of us and making believe with that, making that happen. So, you know, whatever lady is laying down here that is supposedly dead, whatever that picture is that represents my mother that's now dead, whatever any of this is, that theoretically none of these things are good enough. I can't simply look at that picture or look at this actress that's lying here and act with this person. No, what I have to do is reach deep down into my emotional pocket and pull up, I guess, what a story of when my mom passed, or what I felt for my mom, or what it was like the day that I, you know, was with my mom when she passed. I mean, what that's what I need to do? I need to actually kind of superimpose that on this? I need to actually think of that moment? Now, you know, I'm sure some people think, well, yeah, why wouldn't that work? I mean, my goodness, I know whenever I think of my mom, you know, this happens. Or I know that, you know, it would make it more real to me. And I can appreciate that, right? You think, well, why not do that? But, you know, a number of things. One, let's say you did do that. You know, there will come a time, I don't mean this in any mean or callous way, where when you pull that little emotional tic-tac out and pop it in your mouth to get you going on the scene, it's just not going to have the same effect anymore. Why? Well, because you keep using it. And you know, all you're doing is manipulating a memory into something that's happening in present. And while the first few times, particularly if you've just lost someone or lost some situation you're drawing off of, it'll be very potent then. And after a while, not so much. And then after a while longer, not even nearly what you were hoping it would do. It won't be the emotional Viagra you were hoping it was going to be. It'll just lose its potency. You know, I don't think that my parents died so that I could use them as some sort of, you know, emotional kindling in order to start my little theatrical emotional fires. I don't think that's why they died. I think it'd be disrespectful to use them for that. I think that what happens is all of these things that happen to us in life not only, you know, give us a new experience, but they also add to our emotional depth, particularly if we're paying attention and we're processing things as accurately as we can. And we're not just sticking our head in the sand and pretending like the you know, our life isn't happening. But as we take in these things, you see, and the better we get at it, the better we get at it, you bring in these things, and so now you have a sense of loss. And you know exactly what that feels like. Oh, my goodness, I do. So, you know, if I start to get myself thinking like what is in front of me isn't enough and I need to go and, you know, dig into this, you know, memory pocket, then you're already telling yourself that the thing that you're trying to do is hard. And this is what I mean by disempowering you. It's not hard. Why would it be hard? First of all, it's your gig. You know, people didn't come by where you work and say, what are you doing? Oh, I'm a painter. Not anymore. Come on, you come with us. You're an actor. Let's get going. We need you on the stage 7. No, you've chosen this. This is your gig. This is part of what you have to do. You have to make believe and hopefully make believe better than the next, you know, 6 million people. And that's how you'll get gigs. But this long way around of continually telling yourselves that I have to substitute, I actually have to overlay, I actually have to be thinking of my dead cat while I'm looking at this lady playing my mother, that's just ripe for failure. Well, let's say that you did do that. Don't you know there's going to be a point where you're just going to become even more aware of the fact that you're thinking about a kitty cat right now, but you're staring at this actress who's trying to sit perfectly still, but you can see her chest moving up and down just a little bit, and you're wondering if the camera is catching that. There's a million reasons to suddenly feel like phony baloney when you're working in this industry. It's everywhere. It's everywhere you look in the direction of the camera. It's all the backstage fake walls. It's the fake props. It's the not anything that you're looking at that's supposed to be there that isn't. It is a million things. We don't need actors that need to, you know, get themselves into some sort of trance so that they can look in a cigar box. This is just garbage. Now, do I mean to kind of minimize what our business really is? No. I'm trying to tell you that if you actually want to be a samurai in this business, you can't come with all of this stuff. When I say working professionals travel light, that this is one of the many examples. But for the main reason that it disempowers you, the more you tell yourself you need to do in order to do that, the worse off you are. Now, come on, common sense, I want you to think about that. Come on, at least will you agree that in theory, it would be nice. We've been talking about this these past few podcasts. In theory, wouldn't it be nice if you didn't have to work as hard, if you could somehow magically be more adept with less energy output? Wouldn't that be a wonderful thing? Would you like that? I know you, if you've listened to the past few podcasts, you know I've brought up the $1 million offer a number of times where I would pay you $1 million cash tax-free to just right now walk out and do whatever I told you to do in front of these people, and if you convince them, then you get the money. It could be something as horrible as, hey, you just lost your family. They were in Peru, and you just got message that there was a part of a mountain came down. It was a horrible landslide. There had been a lot of rain, and it took out half a village, and your whole family went there. It was just by dumb luck you weren't with them. but you couldn't leave on the day they left, and you're supposed to catch up with them 3 days from now, and you just heard it, and you walk out. Now go out there and do it. Go now, right now. That's pretty heavy. I mean, there could be a litany of questions. They could ask you about, you know, your family, how many were in them, what their names were, what the town was. Do they know exactly? Do you know exactly what happened? You know, and you would answer all of those questions. Now, don't tell me you wouldn't, because even if you got all, you know, suddenly flustered and couldn't think of names, whatever, you would beautifully play it off as though you were just so shook you couldn't remember anything, and then you would figure and you would come up with it. Why? Because there's $1 million tax-free at play. And like I keep saying, I buy all your trepidation. I buy all of your self-doubt, lack of confidence. I buy all of your inability to believe in yourself or your ability to lie very well. I buy all of that. That's all out the window, boy. That's done. It's gone. I own it now. You don't have any of it, so now you just do it, right? And if they pursued it, and there was some kind of foolish, almost talk show person there who kept leading you down the path of talking more about how much, and do you miss your mom, and what will you do now, and, you know, you would just behave accordingly, perfectly. How is it you could do that? Wade right into something and do all of that and not even know, you know, what you were going to possibly do. Yet, in retrospect, I promise you, and you might agree with me just right now, it would end up being maybe the best work of your life. See, this ability that people have, like with my GIST exercise, our ability to actually hear a story one time and then go off and repeat it in real life, like verbatim. I have always been fascinated with how adept and how amazing our abilities are at recollection and certainly at mustering whatever emotion, whatever we need, man. Whatever we need, we tend to be at our best in real life. And so that's why I've always used it as the book to turn to, as to, well, how do we do it here? How are we so magnificent here? You know, one of the examples that I've used, and I know many of you have heard it, but for those of you that haven't, it's this one of, you know, you have an animal at home, you're out somewhere else, you suddenly get a call, your animal has gotten out, it got hit by a car, and it's gone. Your neighbor called. And now you're very sad, and you go home. And, you know, if we were filming you, you would look just like the owner of an animal that just lost their animal, their beloved animal, and now it's gone. But then the question is always, yeah, but how do you know your animal's gone? How do you know? They didn't send you a picture of it, right? No, you just chose not to disbelieve the person that told you. And everything you did was perfect. You see, I'm interested in what is the shortest route to be able to make that happen, but when we're acting? These emotions are not hard to conjure. Even if you've never had an animal, you've had friends that have had animals that have passed, you've felt empathy, right? You get sad for them. You miss little Corky now, and it wasn't your dog. You know, the big difference is, in real life, we just do it. We don't continually wonder, you know, is this believable? Does this feel real? Are people buying it? Should my eyes be bigger? Maybe I should cry, you know. We don't do any of that stuff, man. To me, this word substitution really exemplifies the problem, you see, and it really boils it down into this one word. The need to substitute something, to overlay it for what's happening in front of you. And we can't do that. These are two separate things. You have life experience that continues to season this beautiful instrument that you are, this violin that you are. And all of these experiences season it, and you have experience through it, and it gives you wisdom, and you have that. That's all now in your own personal iCloud, your own, you know, inventory of experience. And then you go to act, and you see when you do, magically what occurs is like in milliseconds, the information is gathered from all of your resources, from all of your libraries, your emotional libraries, your your visual libraries. That is the trick. And it just goes, and in a millisecond, it just sources it, and it brings it all right there, because you see, you have understanding of how things work. Sometimes I've been teaching so long that, you know, I have people that have worked with me, and then they get distracted. They get married. They have some kids. They can't quite make it to class. Maybe they even drop out of acting a little bit because they've got to get like a full-time job. And then things get, and then they, and then, you know, 20 years later, they come back to me and they look me up and, you know, they want to jump back in or whatever. And I notice, I think without exception, all of them are better actors from day one, from the day they thought they were going to have to be all rusty and this and that. No, no. It's interesting. What happened was they went off and they experienced life, and they saw that, you know, life is the ass kicker. The acting part's the fun. That's the fun part. This business of getting to act and make believe, and, you know, the make believe consequences of it all. This is the frothy fun of it. And they come back in with such a different feeling. And that younger person that I remembered who worried about everything and this and that and this and that, boy, once they were kind of exposed to the heat of living life for a time and maybe, you know, providing for a family and just getting on and, you know, you just continually laying it down day after day, you come back to this and you think, wow, you know what? This shouldn't be hard to do. And I think what happens is they end up making way more of it by making way less of it. They have more patience with themselves and all of these beautiful qualities that, yes, you could argue, you could say, well, that comes with time, you know, the wisdom, this, that. But you know, I'm a youngster. I'm spry. I want to jump around the paddock. Yes, I know, but I'm just saying that you can take the lesson and just try and incorporate as much of the older person's Zen philosophy as possible. And so, if I could pretend to be that person for a moment, I would tell you that you've got to uncomplicate everything you're doing. You got to take it all down, man. You got to worry less. You know, I have a phrase, and I use it sometimes, and I always say it with great respect because I respect it very much. I say, you know, you're like a dumb actor, and I really like that. And what I mean by that is, for me, the dumb actor, and I say it very affectionately, they just don't overthink anything. They don't. They just have a gut understanding of what's happening, which to me is sometimes even more worthwhile than having a really keen intellectual understanding of the scene. It's just they read it, they get it, they identify with it, it strikes a chord. And without overthinking it, they know what the problem is here and they pursue it with vigor. I think, you know, in many regards, I would rather have a team full of those types of actors, because this is a business. This is an art where we have to have just enough information, but not so much that we never get back out of our head again. I need to know enough to be able to go and pursue the thing I'm supposed to pursue, but I don't want to be bogged down with the obligation of a lot of goals or ideas that I have in my head as to the various, you know, levers and ticks and pulls I need to do during my performance because I've set up all this stuff. No, I think what's smarter is that you have as few things as possible to drive the 80%, the 70% of what it is you're doing, and just know that that other 30% is going to fill in on the spot, on the fly, and that is your art. That is what you do. That is your ability to riff and just kind of go along. You know the basic idea. You're clear on your argument. You know what's happening here, and you're pursuing it, and that's it. And then along the way, you'll fill it in. Just like if I send you into a group of people and say you've just lost your family in Peru. I give you a certain amount of information, and then you, on the fly, can always fill in the rest. Now, you see, that is really kind of a very confident way of working. That is like the way you want to be. That is the way you want to operate. So, to review, We can't waste our time trying to trick ourselves into looking like we mean what we say. That's ultimately it right there. And if you just think about that for a second, it is such a massive waste of time. When actors are actually talking about the thing that they're talking about, everything takes care of itself. We never have to worry about authenticity. If you authentically pursue something, an idea, an argument, whatever it may be, if you authentically pursue it, then we have exactly what we need. Of course it's authentic. How could it not be authentic when you authentically pursue the thing? Or thinking that the only way to really, you know, imbue a performance with the sensitivity that it needs or the emotion that it needs is by having some emotions that are associated with something else in our life and trying to overlay that onto the thing we're doing. Man, that is such really a shirking of responsibility, of your duties as an actor. That's not how it works. That's not how it works at all. Look, think about it like this. If you are so incredibly focused and concentrated that you can absolutely lift a past experience up out of your life and then you can bring it here and on a motion picture stage or TV stage or even on the live stage, and now you're going to lay it down in front of us, you're going to relive that moment for us right now. That happened a while ago. That happened a long time ago, perhaps. You know, if you have the focus and ability to do that, are you seriously telling me you don't have the focus and ability to just for a moment in time actually love the person that you're with or care about the loss of the person you're looking at or look at that picture and feel remorse or loss or sadness? You can't do this without all of these other, you know, acting hijinks, really? Come on. The first step in believing that you can do anything you want as an actor is knowing that you can. Thanks for listening. You have been listening to a Real Life Actor podcast. This is Jeff Seymour. Real Life Actor podcasts can now be found on Spotify, iTunes, and Podomatic. Please tell your friends. And if you're in the Los Angeles area and you'd like to audit one of my classes, send me an email at jeff@reallifeactor.com. Thanks for listening.